From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm filled with cranberry sauce, Bill Curtis. And here is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much. It is Thanksgiving, which is when everybody eats and drinks themselves into a stupor and then waits a little while before doing it again.
Not me, Peter. I've mastered the art of circular breathing so I can eat continuously from Thursday morning until dawn of day on Monday.
Well, anyway, we're busy. So this weekend, we're going to offer you some stuff we're thankful for, some of the best stuff we've done in the last few months, or stuff that's terrible in a really compelling way.
We dare you to look away.
Let's start off with something you can't blame on me. I wasn't even there.
Guest host Mike Pesca was the guy at the conductor's podium when we were joined by violinist Itzhak Perlman in February.
So I always like to get into the origin story. And from what I understand, and you fill in what I don't understand, as a boy in Israel, you so badly wanted to play the violin, but you were turned away from the conservatory because a three-year-old, you were too small to actually hold a violin. Does Wikipedia have any of that right?
Where did you read this?
I don't know.
Well, it's actually true.
Ah.
No, I was, I wanted to play when I was three and a half, you know, and it was a little too early. These days, it's actually not, you know, you see a lot. If you look at YouTube, you see a lot of three-year-olds playing, but at that time, things were a little more normal, so we had to wait a little bit, you know, a couple of years.
Uh-huh, and at what point do you go from a kid who has a lot of promise or a kid who's really good to, bang, he's a prodigy?
There's no such thing, you know, I mean, everything is evolved. I realized that I was pretty good about maybe a year ago, you know, to play very well.
So there you were. You were, as a young child, you were denied and you wanted to do it, and you were denied and you wanted to do it. And I know you teach young children now. Do you think that there's something to, you know, crafting greatness to make the barrier to entry into a field even a little bit harder than it is now?
Well, no, I mean, I don't really, I mean, the teaching, I mean, I enjoy teaching young kids. You know, we have a program that my wife started called the Perlman Music Program, where I teach young, promising string players. And I think that, you know, when you have the talent, it's good. You know, it's easy. But, you know, talent is, you know, the level right now of playing is so high. And everybody, now there are a lot of people who really play so well. So that I don't think that's a problem. I think that's very good.
Do you enjoy playing other instruments, banjo, something like that?
No, I'm just a one instrument player. I've been known to play a blender, but I basically play the violin.
And what's your opinion on the electric violin?
It's okay as long as you can play it well. You know, I mean, if you play something well, I don't care what it is. I mean, I don't play it. Like I tried. It's actually interesting, and that's all I can say about it, but I'm an acoustical person.
And how often is this like a once a day, once a week thing that you're asked to play The Devil Went Down to Georgia?
Well, once a year, and today's the day.
And following up on that question, if you were asked to fiddle against the devil where you were wagering your soul, what prize would you ask for in return?
A good meal at some nice restaurant, I guess.
That's confidence, people. Soul against a good meal.
Yeah.
Who would sound better, the second best violin in the world as played by the best player, or the best violin in the world as played by the second best player?
It's the other one.
Yeah.
Playing is playing, you know. It's, you know, to tell a very funny story about the great Yasha Heifetz, you know, he played a concert and the lady came backstage and she said to him, "Mr. Heifetz, your violin sounded so good tonight." And he picked up the violin and he said, "Funny, I don't hear anything."
So when you teach a young child, even an older child, how can you tell if he or she is great or is going to be great?
There is an innate musicality that you hear immediately, you know, and it doesn't matter the level of playing, but you can already hear that something there, that they're being affected by the music. You know, so, you know, sometimes, you know, when we see tapes of people who wants to come into our program, we see even the look on the face when they hear a particular harmony. And that already tells you that somebody has got this musical feel, you know. And of course, the passion is very, very important. And that's really, it's something that you can't really describe. You have to sort of hear it, you know, to see what it is. And then, of course, there is the challenge of the development. You know, if you hear somebody who's 12 who's amazing, you say to yourself, you know, I hope that they've survived their gift and that they're continue to be amazing when they're 18 and 19 years old. You know, that's always a problem, how you develop through these years.
Yeah, that's actually pretty profound and inspiring, and it brings me back to the idea of a fiddle made of gold. Let's just do the math for a second. Now, the density of gold is 35 times the density of wood, and a fiddle or a violin weighs about 400 grams. So a fiddle made of gold would weigh about 30 pounds. Mm-hmm. At a price of $42 per gram, right now a fiddle made of gold would be worth $588,000. My question to you is, how much is your Stradivarius worth?
More. And besides, you know, with the fiddle of gold, I'm going to have to be strictly playing heavy repertoire. So, you know, like, you know, Brahms, Beethoven.
Willie Nelson's guitar has got Friends autographs all over it. Uh-huh. Do you do anything like that? With
no. All right. Very funny.
Just thought of it. Okay, if you're on a desert island and the only instrument there was a banjo.
What would I do?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'll try and find something to eat.
All right. Well, let's play. Itzhak Perlman, let's play a game that we're calling
You're No Hellboy.
Sure, you may be an expert. I'm going to say you are an expert on Itzhak Perlman. But how much do you know about the actor Ron Perlman? Of Hellboy and Beauty and the Beast and Sons of Anarchy, we're going to ask you three questions about the craggy-faced actor. Answer two of them correctly, and you'll win a prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice, on their home answering machine. Carl, who is Itzhak playing for?
Itzhak is playing for Betsy Dowd of Niles, Michigan.
All right, you ready to play?
Okay, Betsy, let's go.
Let's go, Betsy. Here's your first question. In addition to playing the Beast, Ron Perlman is perhaps best known for playing Hellboy in the Hellboy series. Big fans of those movies can do what? A, attend Hellboy summer camp where they learn to track supernatural beings. B, get a Hellboy permit from the Presbyterian Church, allowing them to say the H word without punishment. Or C, get special edition Hellman's Hellboy's mayonnaise, which is red but still tastes like mayonnaise. What do you think?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, I mean, if I was following what my brain tells me, I would say three because it involves the mayonnaise. Mm-hmm. However, I would take a chance on number one.
The summer camp.
Yeah.
You are correct.
Thank you.
There is a Hellboy summer camp outside of Portland. So as we mentioned before, Ron Perlman is known for his distinctive face. When you Google Ron Perlman looks like, which of these is a way that Google finishes the phrase for you? Ron Perlman looks like A, Rhea Perlman, B, Donkey Kong, C, an Easter Island head.
Oh, my God. I can tell you Rhea Perlman is absolutely no.
No.
So we know. So it's between two and three. Can you give me the two and the three again, please?
Do you think that Google thinks that Ron Perlman looks like Donkey Kong or an Easter Island head?
Easter Island head or Donkey Kong? What's Donkey Kong?
Remember the demo.
Is Donkey Kong the game?
It's a video game with a large-faced ape.
Okay, that's what I'm going to say.
You're right. It is Donkey Kong. I don't know, parents. I mean, wouldn't you rather have your kids know about video games from the 80s than be the world's greatest violinist?
Ron, I forgot about those games. Yeah. You know, I mean, I you know, I've already forgotten them. I'm now into the Sugar Crash or whatever you call that.
Candy Crush, yeah. Sorry, the maestro could not play tonight. He's just exploding bananas on level 243.
I wish.
Ron Perlman is not only an actor, he's also directed episodes of Beauty and the Beast, and he runs his own production company. How does Ron Perlman describe his directing style? A, I like to lure actors in with the beauty, then I show them the beast. B, I don't like working with me. I would punch myself in the mouth if I had to take my direction. C, I honestly have no idea what I'm doing, and I'm scared. Please don't publish this.
It's probably wrong. I'll take two.
That is correct. Letter B. He'd punch himself in the mouth. Fortunately for Ron Perlman, he looks like someone who could take a punch. Carl, how did Itzhak do?
Three correct answers, so Itzhak, you win for Betsy Dowd. Congratulations.
You did it, Itzhak. Thank you so much. Congratulations. I'm sure this ranks right up there with all the achievements and the presidents and the queens and the awards.
Tell me, what does Betsy win? You know, I want to know. I'm so curious.
Carl's voice on the answering machine and a free pass to Candy Crush level 243.
No.
Itzhak Perlman is hosting Bows and Batons, a four-day music retreat at Gideon Putnam Resort in New York. Itzhak Perlman, thank you so much for joining us on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you so much.
When we come back, the Wait, Wait Guide to the United Kingdom, whatever that is, and we take an incredible journey inside Amy Schumer. We'll be back with more Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Hey, here's a shout out to one of our new sponsors, Match.com, number one in dates, relationships, and marriages. They have redefined the way that you can connect with people you want to meet, both online and offline. With nationwide events and the ability to search and communicate with other members, it's no surprise that every year, hundreds of thousands of people find love on Match. And for our podcast listeners, Match is offering the opportunity to try out Match for 7 days completely free. Just go to trymatch.com to get started with your 7 days free today. And suggest that, you know, one of your enthusiasms is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. You'll know you'll only get the best people then.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you so much. Thank you.
I just snuck away and got, you know, another turkey sandwich during the break. I'm feeling good. So this week, we are soothing your indigestion with amusing bits from the past year.
But not just amusing, also useful. For example, have you ever heard of the United Kingdom? It's a country somewhere east of here.
Okay, you might have heard of it, but not everyone has. Here's part of a show we did in September in Seattle with panelists Luke Burbank, Maz Jobrani, and Paula Poundstone.
It's much easier to say yes, but sometimes you have to say no.
That was someone in a place that decided no, it would not become an independent country after all. What country?
Scotland,
yes, indeed. People sound unenthusiastic. They were apparently, you were hoping for an independent Scotland, Seattle? Is that what you? Yeah. It came down to the wire, but Scotland voted to stay part of the United Kingdom on Thursday. The UK was incredibly relieved. They don't have to separate, you know, their record collection. But it turns out nobody was more relieved than David Cameron, because the Prime Minister of Great Britain, because this let Scotland vote thing was his idea. He calculated that leaving the kingdom was so obviously a terrible idea that of course they'd vote against it. But these are Scots. They love terrible ideas. Like, let's wear a kilt in the winter. Let's eat a sheep stomach. Let's live in Scotland.
It's sort of funny because, you know, you think about Scotch tape holding things together.
Yeah. When you think of Scotch, you think of adhesive things.
And you can't help but think of adhesive things. I mean, I don't know if there's really a relationship between those two.
Well, there's Scotch tape and there's Scotch whiskey, so you think of drunk people stuck together, which pretty much describes the United Kingdom as of Friday morning.
I didn't tell you something, and I'm deeply ashamed of this, but I've really never understood the whole United Kingdom thing.
Amen, sister.
Well, what do you mean you don't understand it?
I really have no idea what's connected.
Yeah. No, you see, the idea is that there are countries, Scotland, England, Wales, Northern Ireland, that are combined into the United Kingdom.
I never knew that. It feels like an awkward time to learn it.
Yeah. Now,
I learn a lot on this show. And apparently they have very mature 16-year-olds there because they had 16-year-olds vote. I have a 16-year-old son. I don't let him choose what to eat.
This is true. This is probably why it came down to the wire, because they did, in fact, for the first time in Scotland, give 16 and 17-year-olds the vote.
The vote for everything?
And you can ask if they could vote in independence. It's like, oh, great, do you want to stay living in your mother's attic, or would you like to be free? Well,
the good news is Justin Bieber is the new prime minister.
Yeah.
So... That'll be fun to see what happens.
That worked out well, I think.
The ballot was amazingly simple. It was a single question. Do you think Scotland should be an independent country? Check yes or no. That's it. One box yes, one box no. That is not a ballot. That is a note that was passed to you in junior high school. Do you have a crush on Great Britain? Yes or no?
Wait, what does Canada have to do with it? Is Canada...
Canada has nothing to do with that.
Don't they have the queen on their coin?
They do.
And, is that just from admiration? Why do they have that?
They're very nice in Canada.
Yeah. And they also celebrate the queen's birthday. So there's a queen's day.
Yeah,
they do.
Well, that's because Canada is part of the Commonwealth.
Oh, my God.
You see, of Great Britain.
Well, I'd want independence from these people, too. It's very confusing.
Yeah. I think if you listen closely, you can hear about 4 million Americans going, why am I not on that panel? Those are the dumbest people I've ever heard in my life.
No.
This was the best you could do, public radio?
You didn't. No, that's not true. You did not know. Of course, it rains a lot here and they read. It doesn't rain where we live. We don't read. But you didn't know that Canada was part of the Commonwealth, did you?
You realize Canada is 4 blocks away here. Yeah. They need to know this. Now, at the same show, we happen to talk about another member of the great British Commonwealth. Paula, the Canadian Air Force, which is something that exists.
it's part of the UK, isn't it?
No. It's faced with a shortfall in funding. They've had to go where to get replacement parts for their planes?
Oh, geez. I feel like I should know this. They had to go to... can you give me a hint? I do know this.
Well, they were able to get all they needed at the gift shop near the exit.
Oh, they had to go to a museum of, like, historic airplanes.
Exactly right. They had to go to a museum to get their parts. But don't get excited, enemies of Canada. The flying Mounties will still be guarding the skies, thanks to some quick thinking and the failure of a museum to adequately guard its exhibits. Also, if you're an enemy of Canada, seriously, what is your problem?
Honestly, yeah.
Pick on somebody who's not too self-conscious to fight back, why don't you? The Canadian Air Fleet had not been upgraded since 2002. Basically, all they had left was one old C-130 and a big plaid hot air balloon. So to repair their fleet, they had to go to a museum in Ontario and strip the parts from display planes. They just went for navigational equipment and stuff, but it was a waste because they had a whole museum. They should have outfitted a fighter plane with, like, pterodactyl wings. That would have terrified their enemies. The Canadian cavalry also got excited. They went and did it. They were thrilled with what they got, but then they found out all the horses they had rescued were stuffed.
Does that mean Canada's broke? They can't afford to buy parts?
Well, they're not adequately funding their Air Force, apparently.
Do they need the Air Force?
That's a good question. I mean, seriously.
Really?
Yeah, who are they going to fight?
Who are they going
maybe,
to fight?
I'll maybe
tell you what, if you want to know, being a Northwesterner, the big beef between the folks in Washington State and Canada revolves around
a Costco
up at the border.
Is that true?
This is absolutely true. And those Canadians, backed by their futuristic air power, were coming across the border and buying lots of things and making these tremendously terrible lines at our Costco. And the residents of Blaine, Washington were not having that.
So
really?
So this is why...
So this is how...
So this is why Canada is beefing up their planes?
Yeah.
Because of the great Costco war of planes?
That's exactly what's behind this.
The Battle of Costco.
Yeah. Yes. Someday
freedom! It was the Battle of Costco. There were many carts involved. Big, large carts. And, and an airplane with museum parts flew overhead. Taking out one of the carts. And
like they're shouting, free or discounted in bulk.
Yeah. Someday kids will ask their parents, you know, what aisle did you serve in?
Are you right away? No delay, go today. Make your daddy glad to have had such a lad. Tell your sweetheart, Nuttle Pine, to be proud her boy's in line. Over there, send the word over there, that the Yanks are...
One of the funniest new shows on TV is Comedy Central's Inside Amy Schumer, a sketch show about the life and times of Miss Schumer.
Amy Schumer joined us in April of this year, and Peter asked if she identified as a, quote, female comedian.
You know what? I completely identify as female, believe it or not.
Really?
Yes, I've got all the parts. I love being referred to as a female comedian. I don't like when people tell me that they don't like female comedians. That's my only issue with it.
Really?
And they go, don't like female comics, but you're funny. And you're like, well, who have you seen? And then they have nothing to follow it up with. And then you realize that they've never met a real woman.
Ever.
And the question, though, that people say all the time, what's it like being a female comedian? Like, it's such a strange question. I've never known how to answer that question.
Well, it's like being...
You know, I say, well, I pee sitting down.
Right.
Are you funny when you do that?
Oh, man.
People say, you're the funniest girl comedian. It's like, well, what about just comedian? Do you say, oh, you're my favorite black person? Like, you're allowed... Sorry, I know you guys don't have to talk about black people on NPR.
No. I wanted to talk to you about your show, Amy, because I did not know it. I've sort of had a crash course. I've been watching it all week. But what's great about the show is, could you describe that? It's a sketch show, but there seems to be sort of a consistent theme. You play a variety of characters, and you're very good, but a lot of the characters are about a woman named Amy.
Mm-hmm.
And this person, Amy, is hilarious, but not all that pleasant.
Right, like real people.
Yeah.
There are all these characters. I mean, I've got a terrible person in me just as much as anybody else, and I like to think I also have a really good person in me. I mean, right now, nobody's in me. I'm just sitting here alone.
Okay. I'm always interested in how comedians got started. Do you remember the kind of material you did when you started out as a comedian?
Yeah, and I'm still proud of a lot of my jokes when I started, but they were, I had a joke where I said that, my boyfriend is always turning the lights on, you know, before we make love, and I shut him off, and he puts them on, and then the other day he's like, why are you so shy? You have a beautiful body. And I said, oh my God, you're so cute. You think I don't want you to see me. That was one of my earliest.
That was mean.
I have to ask you this.
Oh, PJ, are you still here? I thought you were hiding under the desk.
A lot of your comedy is about you as a failed person who dates. You know, you're constantly having these hilarious misadventures with men and failing. Do guys who you are interested in dating, are they nervous? Is it like dating Taylor Swift? Because anybody who dates Taylor Swift is like, I'm going to be a song, aren't I? And with you, it's like, I'm going to be a sketch, aren't I?
Yeah, and I always think that's so sweet that they think they're interesting enough. I don't want to write about them, but that rarely happens.
Really?
No, you know what? The truth is, whoever I've dated, if I've ever wanted to talk about them on stage, I've asked them first, and I've gotten their permission to tell a story or talk about them before I do it.
That's very nice of you. You did a hilarious bit, I think it was in a stand-up special rather than your show, about dating a guy and going to bed with him and discovering that he was missing a certain part of his anatomy.
Oh, my God. How are we going to talk about this?
I don't know. But I'm going to try. If it doesn't work, you know. All right.
This will be fun. Really fun.
So you, and hey, it's a very, very funny bit about how you're like, oh, my God. I mean, you just expect them to be there and they're not there. the fact that I use the plural will indicate what I'm talking about. So are you telling me, Amy Schumer, that before doing that hilarious, great bit of stand-up, you called up the guy and said, "Hi, it's Amy. Remember me? I was the one who shrieked in surprise." And I was wondering, I mean, did you do that?
I did not shriek in surprise. I played it very cool. You know, I'm not a math wizard, but I do know that there were only half of what should have been present there. Well, first of all, I played it so cool that I didn't even mention it in the moment. I called a week later and asked, "Hey, where was this at?" I like hide and go seek as much as the next girl, but it would have been nice to know. And he said, "Yeah," and we talked about it. And then I wanted to talk about it on stage, and I called and I asked him, and he said, "Go ahead." And as long as I don't say his name, and you know, Ryan, wherever you are. No, but he
is
said
it Ryan Klopnik? Oh my gosh!
Yes, you know him?
Yes. Yes, onesie. It's my friend onesie.
Amy Schumer, it is a real pleasure to talk to you, and we have invited you here today to play a game that this time we're calling
Play Ball.
It was the first week of baseball season, thank God. So we're going to ask you three questions about the House of David baseball team, one of the weirdest teams in the history of baseball. Get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners. Carl, who is Amy Schumer playing for?
Amy is playing for Fiona and David Sutherland of Southbury, Connecticut.
All right, you ready to play?
Yes, I'll do my best for you guys.
Now, the House of David baseball team was a traveling team in the first half of the 20th century. And according to an article we saw at the Need Supply Company blog, the House of David team was known and soon became nationally famous because of what quirk? A, every time they got a base hit, they would stop to pray on the base path, resulting in a lot of outs. B, all the players wore very long hair and even longer beards. Or C, they would line up after a game and apologize to their opponents for winning.
Ooh, those are all pretty good. I'm half Jewish, so I have half confidence here. I'm going to say B.
B, they wore long hair and long beards.
Long hair and long beards.
You were correct.
All right.
They had long hair and long beards. Although, and it was an easy mistake to make because they were called the House of David and they had beards, but they were not Jewish. They belonged to an evangelical millennial cult in Michigan. But one of the rules of this cult was you can't cut your hair or your beard. All right. In addition to being credited with staging the first night games in baseball, the House of David team also featured what baseball innovation? A, instant replay. In those days, they just had actors who would come out in the field and reenact the play in slow motion. B, female players who were required to wear fake beards, or C, performance-enhancing drugs, namely a Vim and Vigor tonic they also sold up in the stands.
Really hard. I'm guessing that these guys like to keep their women in the quote-unquote dugout. So let's go C.
You're going to go with C, the performance-enhancing drug known as the Vim and Vigor tonic?
Yeah, and I need to write that down. That sounds great.
Vim and Vigor tonic, that's with a V. No, actually, it was B. They had women players. They were remarkably politically liberal for their times. They had women players. They had African-American players long before the major leagues did. But as per their rules, everyone had to have a beard, real or fake.
Wow.
All right, now this is exciting. You have, it's bottom of the ninth, whatever metaphor you want. You can get this one right, you'll win. The House of David team, at that point, again, pretty famous and successful, they put out an offer to Babe Ruth, who at that time had retired from the Yankees. Ruth's manager replied that Ruth would not play with the team. Why? A, because he had died 6 months before. B, because of a childhood accident in the orphanage with some hot wax, he could not grow a beard. Or C, there was no way Babe Ruth would ever take a vow of temperance.
I'm going to go with See, I don't think the Babe would take that out.
You were exactly right. That's what happened. The manager told the team the Babe would never give up his beer and his liquor, as all House of David players were required to do. Carl, how did Amy Schumer do in our quiz?
She's a winner. Two correct answers, Peter.
Well done, Amy.
Woo-hoo.
Congratulations. Amy Schumer is the creator and star of Inside Amy Schumer. You can watch the second season Tuesday nights on Comedy Central. Please do. It is hilarious. Amy Schumer, thank you so much for joining us. What a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks, Amy.
Thank you so much for having me.
Bye-bye.
There's something inside me that just won't let me be.
Coming up, learn a foreign language the Wait, Wait way and the best discussion of mouse threesomes ever. We'll be back with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Thanks, everybody. One of the things we pride ourselves here at Wait, Wait is opening a window to the world for you, the listeners.
And then scaring you so much, you slam it shut and go back to binge-watching Cold Case Files on Netflix. I'll tell you what, that's a quality program.
The first thing you need to know about world leaders is how to imitate them. Here's guest panelist Rosie Perez with some useful advice from a show we did in May.
Just because we have the best hammer doesn't mean that every problem is a nail.
That was somebody saying just because you have a really big army and an air force and some cool bombs that fly by themselves, you shouldn't always use them. Who was it?
I don't know.
That's surprising, only because Bill's impression was so accurate.
it was scary.
Yeah, it was like being in the room.
It really was. Yeah.
My guess is it would be President Obama.
Yes, it is. Good President girl. Obama. The commander-in-chief once again attended a commencement at West Point. He likes to go there because those are the only students he can order to let him do keg stands.
I just want to make a comment on your impersonation of the president.
Yeah.
Next time, use a lot of pauses and a lot of and then you'll be right on.
So hold on, I think the nation clamors, Rosie, for your impression of President Obama right now.
Me doing a impersonation of the president? Come on.
Yes, we can.
Every great country needs a great adversary, just like Spider-Man and giant spider-eating Birdman. Here's Wait, Wait's coverage of America's most sinister opponent, Vladimir Putin.
Your humble servant was not elected by the people of Russia to be pleasant to someone.
That was somebody explaining why he wasn't going to be pleasant to President Obama this week. Who is it?
Would that have been Vladimir Putin?
Yes, indeed, Vladimir Putin. A lot of Putin fans here. That's great. He does look good with his shirt on.
Yeah, he does.
Mr. Putin, to use the delicate, subtle language of diplomacy, is a pain in the ass. He is blocking the UN from taking action on Syria. He gave asylum to Edward Snowden. Now, of course, he's hosting President Obama and other world leaders at the G20 summit. He made his distaste for us known by having Obama sit at the small nations table. That's a card table they set up in the kitchen near the main banquet. That was okay, but it really bothered Obama when he had to make the toast with grape juice. That was like...
Now, Putin's a killer, but now he's settling for being just a needler, right?
Yeah.
But with Obama right now, he's sort of like, you have something on your shirt. Made you look.
Also, by the way, I not only have Snowden, I got your nose.
One problem for America right now is that Putin his government has been cracking down on gays and lesbians in Russia. This is surprising, coming from a man who often has himself photographed shirtless standing next to bears. People want to punish Russia for their new homophobic laws by taking away the Winter Olympics. That'll be coming up in like February of next year. But is there any better punishment for a homophobic country than making them host the Winter Olympics? You know, because you know what they say, if they outlaw homosexuality, then only outlaws will compete in ice dancing.
That's really going to be great, isn't it? Just to have ice dancing, figure skating,
just the whole program over there, and it's just knowing it's going to drive him crazy.
It's gonna, his, he'd be sitting there in the welcoming ceremony going, what is with all these spangles?
Why am I wearing this singlet again?
I always find myself in this singlet at the end of the day.
It's why blinding, is... but I am so aware of myself as man. I don't understand my feelings.
This is a very touching scenario we've come up with. I'm imagining Vladimir Putin standing there in his, you know, palatial apartments, holding up, you know, like Johnny Weir's stolen outfit up to his neck. And a tear comes to his eye, you know. And you flash back to his father saying, no, put away skates. You Adam, Vladimir Putin has been busy doing things like invading Ukraine and lying about invading
Not
Ukraine.
Not an invasion, a visit.
A visit. A visit. Oh, look, I brought tanks.
Yes.
But according
picnic tanks. Well, that's why we covered them in gingham. Picnic. Sorry.
Anyway, so he's been doing all that, but according to the official Russian news agency, he still had time, that guy, to do what last week?
He still had time to knit in a reclining position. No.
I'm sure he did all those things, too.
He still had time.
We imagine that he'll be called Vlad and be to former Soviet states what the Cookie Monster is to cookies.
He made a puppet of himself. He puppeted.
I'll give it to you. He basically invented a puppet for a Russian kids TV show. The show is called Good Night, Little Ones, which sounds really sinister if you imagine Vladimir Putin saying it.
Whispering it to the Ukraine as he pushes a button.
Yes. It is the longest running kids TV show in Russia, and Putin called them up and made a suggestion for a new puppet. Suggestion in this case meaning thing you get killed if you don't do.
Fantastic puppet. Suggestion for puppet. We make it now.
Yes, exactly. We're not sure of the specifics of the new puppet, but President Putin, in his generosity, is donating excess chest hair to weave him. And then there will be this weird episode where the Putin puppet invites all the other puppets over for a chicken dinner, and no one can find Big Bird. No coverage of foreign affairs would be complete without checking in with our own international bureau, the man who can imitate any foreign accent in a way that perfectly inspires the rage of people who are actually from those places. That's Mr. Maz Jobrani. Your next story of what got hot during this last year comes from Maz Jobrani.
First, there was MySpace, then came Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Vine. It seems every day there's a new social website for kids to keep up with. How is a teen to manage it all? Easy, by multitasking. Vilemandar Patel, a web designer in Silicon Valley, has come up with the latest website, FootFoot, which allows kids to social media with their feet while they're using their hands to text, Instagram, or tweet on another phone. My daughter was confused. Dad, she said, should I close my Twitter account now that I spend most of my time on Vine? What about Instagram? It's too much to do. And so I developed FootFoot, which allows my little angel to update all of her sites with her feet while she's using her hands to text or maybe even eat her dinner for once. Patel was quoted as saying, if your feet aren't enough, I am working on a new site that allows you to update your status with other body parts. I'm calling it FaceBot.
Let me just say, Maz, that I know now from long experience that there's nothing our listeners appreciate more and write in to let us know how much they appreciate than your ethnic accents.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm anticipating a wave of real enthusiasm for that.
Yeah. Well, I toned the accent down intentionally. I'm actually married to an Indian woman, so if
that's not going to help any of us, moms. Kiri, later this year, the Italian Space Agency will launch its Futura mission. And to prepare for the arrival of Italian astronauts, the International Space Station announced it will do what?
Send up a shipment of garlic?
No. They're installing something on the space station for the Italians' comfort and enjoyment.
Pasta maker?
Close.
Ooh, close.
Something Italians like?
A decent coffee maker?
Exactly, an espresso machine.
Yeah, all right.
The Americans and Russians might be content, you know, with weak coffee from the space Dunkin' Donuts, but not the Italians. The Italian coffee company Lavazza has designed the world's first space espresso machine. They called it the Espresso Machine, ISS, International Space Station. Yeah, thank
you. Clever.
Thank you, Italy. Seems excessive, but keep in mind, the Americans make water up there by recycling their own urine. The Italians were like, yeah, we'll make our own coffee, thanks. Americans like, no, I'll operate it. I had a big Gatorade this morning. I'm ready to do a latte. Let's go.
I wonder, they must have, like, the nicest space suits, because I know that Alitalia...
They're fitted.
Yeah, the suits are designed by Armani on Alitalia. It's true. And so I wonder if they have, like, hey, ciao, bello.
Oh, yeah. The drape on the space suits. Very nice.
This helmet's a little too big. Can you make it a little smaller? I want to... feeling good. I don't know how to fly this thing, but I look good. Hey.
Your next story of fish terrorizing landlubbers comes from Maz Jobrani.
Just when you thought it was safe to pump some gas, along comes the shark bandit. This sharp-toothed robber has been victimizing gas stations in and around the Seattle area for weeks. Disguised as a shark, this suspect approaches gas station attendants and robs them at teeth point. His sidekick is a mermaid. Ahmad Abdullah Rahim of the Main Street Shell Station was quoted as saying, I look outside and I think, why is there a shark at pump number 8?
Hold on, Maz. I just want to interrupt. Could you tell the listening audience where you're from originally?
I'm from Iran.
Thank you. Go on.
But that's a Jordanian accent. So Jordanians, write in. Then I look again and I see there is also mermaid. Before I know it, they're inside. The shark tells me to give him all my money and some beef jerky or he will bite me. Their getaways have been a bit slow given the mermaid's difficulty in running with a tail. Abdullah Rahim explains, after I give them the money, I see them run for their car. The shark was fast. The mermaid, she just waddles. But she looked good. Police are still searching.
Luca, Pizza Hut in Australia pushed the art of marketing one step further than it's ever been pushed before when they offered customers a free what if they bought 10 pizzas?
A date with Paul Hogan. Crocodile Dundee.
No.
My Australia references are a bit dated.
Yes.
Hope you'll all forgive me.
No shame in that.
Can I have a...
That's not a knife. This is a knife. Yeah. Remember that? Yeah.
How about, let's see, this is Pizza Hut pizza, so would they give you a free pizza from somewhere else?
We'll give you better food.
Yeah. I'm getting so close. One more Pizza Hut pizza, and then I get a real pizza. Can I get a hint?
Yeah. The little exercise wheel costs extra.
They gave you a pet hamster?
Yes, a hamster. Or a gerbil, or maybe a lizard or a snake. It all depends on what you like on your pizza. The store said that with the purchase of 10 pizzas, customers would get, quote, one small pet, unquote, from a nearby pet store. They were obviously trying to reach the demographic of people who are really, really hungry and want to hunt their dessert. The offer was met with outrage by local animal activists, and the restaurant soon apologized and canceled the promotion. The animal activists thought they had scored a victory, but when the next pizza they ordered had really tiny pepperoni.
That's got to be someone at the marketing meeting, going like, McDonald's gives the little toys and the boats and the toys. We should give them something a little more lively. Like, just give them like... a little more. Let's go. And someone's like, how about a crocodile? That's too much. A little less.
I don't care what you say, Maz. Yeah. I just want you to keep talking in your Australian accent. Please continue.
Very realistic.
The way you... It's very easy. You just channel pirate. And... and then you do a bad Australian accent.
Really? That's the secret?
How about a little hamster?
We'll finish our special Thanksgiving show with one more thing to be thankful for. You're not a laboratory mouse.
Although, as we reported last summer, there are bright spots to a lab mouse's life. Roy, scientists reported this week on an interesting memory experiment in which they were able to use a laser to replace bad memories in mice with good memories.
And mice have lots of bad memories.
Oh, they do. Oh. It's something in mice. Now, put that aside.
Because, the time.
But how the laser...
I can't go back there, man. Right turn, left turn, right turn, left turn. Oh, my God. Where's my cheese? Just give me the cheese.
What I want you to do is I want you to forget about the bit about changing good memories into bad with the laser. We don't know what that was about, and maybe it'll be useful someday. What we were interested in is how, because they needed to do this experiment, they needed to give the mice a bad memory, which they did with an electric shock, but they needed to also create a good memory for the mouse to conduct these experiments, and they gave each of the male mice what?
A memory of... A female mouse.
Well, not a memory. Well, they did, but not just one. I'll give you a hint.
Oh.
It's sort of like a message à toi.
A memory of doing it with two female mice?
Yeah, they basically... basically, in order to give these mice good memories that they could then experiment with, they gave the mice threesomes.
Whoa.
They
rented.
Wow. It's always been a fantasy of mine. Never said it out loud. It's like these guys know me.
So what we imagine is like, the scientists are sitting around, right? And they're thinking about what would give a mouse a good memory. And just, you know, as one of the scientists was about to say, well, we could go with cheese, another scientist shouts out, threesome! Threesome!
Yeah. One scientist said, how about fishing with their dad?
And the mice all said, no, no, no.
No, 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 no. Listen to the first guy. Listen to the first guy.
What's the bad memory? Do we know?
Oh, it was the electric shock.
Just the shock.
Yeah. The bad memory was being on a wheel while the guy with the threesome was in the other tank.
Trying to get over there to join in. You don't get anywhere. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Pimsleur Language Programs, offering tools to say Cyber Monday in more than 50 languages with 30-minute daily lessons at Pimsleur.com. The John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age, and Progressive Insurance with its Apron Project, celebrating progress and the people who make it happen. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, Benevolent Overlord. BJ Liederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Waltrover and Miles Dernboss. Our technical director is Lorna White. Our CFO is Andy N. Our production coordinator is Robert Newhouse. Our senior producer, that's Ian Chillog. The executive producer at Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is, say it with me, Michael Linwood Danforth. Thanks to Bill Curtis. Thanks to all of our panelists. And, of course, the inimitable and immortal Carl Castle. I'm Peter Sagal, and we will see you next week. This is NPR.